Chapter 10. Webway. Reaching the Eleusinian Vale meant passing through the Radiant Worlds. Only a fool would take his ship directly into them and face the destructive waves of the phenomenon we called the Fire Tide. But fortunately, there was another possibility. We would not sail through that region of psychic flame. We would cut past it. To do so, we would need to drift into the webway. Kingdoms fall, empires die. It is the way of things. We now look upon the declining Eldar as one of the galaxy's most ancient species. Yet they were nothing more than slave children to the first race, known to us now as the Old Ones. Of the Old Ones, we know almost nothing. Their blood was cold, their skin scaled, and all else remains myth and mystery. Their ambition, influence, and power are beyond the minds of anyone still living. All we know for certain is that they understood the nature of the warp millennia before most species were even born, and knew its threats better than any of us can comprehend, even now. We call it the Underworld and the Sea of Souls. But this is ignorant human poetry grafted onto cold metaphysical truth. The Empyrean is made of souls the way texts from the Dark Age of technology tell us water is made of three atoms, one of oxygen and two of hydrogen. Etheria, ectoplasma, the fifth element. Call it what you will. We are speaking of the very material substance of souls. The warp is not a realm where souls go to dwell. It is a realm made entirely from soul matter. Souls do not exist within the warp. They are the warp. The Old Ones knew this. They knew it and rose above its damning touch with the creation of a method of galactic travel that bypassed any need to sail through the underworld. Even my father, Magnus the Red, knew little of it, and named it the Labyrinthine Dimension. To those of us aware of its existence now, including the Eldar, who still make great use of it, it is more commonly called the Webway. Behind reality and unreality alike, this dimension of hidden avenues stretches across our galaxy. On one planet, it may be nothing more than a portal that opens on one landmass and leads to another, large enough for one man to pass through. Elsewhere, in the darkness where no stars shine, entire Eldar fleets and craft worlds sail through its unseen reaches. Here is where hundreds of thousands of otherwise doomed Eldar took shelter from the youngest god's genesis and the death of their empire. Komorra, the dark city of Nefertari's birth, is the greatest alien port within its depths, but not the only one. Time and endless war have not been kind to the Webway. Demons flood whole regions of its maze-like passages, and what was once a galaxy-spanning construct of inconceivable vision is now a hollow shell of its former majesty. So much of it is silent, cold, and forgotten. The rest is largely unmapped by human hands, and its billion gates go unnoticed by human senses. It is not a realm for our kind. Those of us in the Empire of the Eye see more of its legacy than any imperial. It exists within our realm, just as stone ruins of bygone civilizations may linger on any primitive imperial world. Entrances into the broken labyrinth exist just out of sight, or show at the edges of our perceptions. On demon-claimed worlds and in deep ice space alike, those of us with keen enough senses will feel these holes in our warped reality. Sometimes it is something as shadow-shrouded and darkly majestic as a rift in space, vast enough to allow a whole fleet through, showing the tenebrous image of an alien planetscape suspended in nothingness. Other portals are as simple and small as an arched wraithbone doorway, buried beneath a planet's surface. There is no unity to the Webway's entrances and exits. As you would expect, most of the Webway's pathways inside the Great Eye's borders are worthless and shattered from the youngest god's devastating birth scream. Functional or broken, most of those that remain are flooded with Neverborn, seeking a way deeper into real space, hungering for the blood and souls on offer aboard Eldar craft worlds. Only a rare few are considered viable avenues through our purgatorial domain, and even these lost routes are rarely sailed. Some are simply unnecessary. It's a crumbling remnant of a network, after all, offering passage from nowhere of relevance to nowhere of use. Those that still function cleanly, the truly useful pathways, are some of the Eye's most unquestionably valuable secrets. Individuals among the nine legions who manage to compile even fragmentary maps of worthwhile Webway portals can name any price for their knowledge, and hundreds of warbands will willingly pay. I learned of the Avernus breach almost a century before, and the price of that knowledge was 6 years of service to an 8th Legion warband led by a warrior named Dar Lethrul. My services always came at a high price in Mechanicum artifact automatons, but certain other offers were too precious to pass up. 6 years of binding demons and destroying Dar Leth's enemies. 6 years of my Rubrikai serving in brutal raids against other warships, all to learn the location of a single reliable Webway path. It was worth it. I now knew of several dozen still functional thoroughfares within the Eye, and while I doubted I had the most complete map of any warrior among the Nine Legions, what I did possess was valuable beyond reckoning. There is no artificial marker or ancient gate denoting most entrances to the Webway. We took the Talok to a region of space that seemed no different from the rest of the Eye's chaotic tides, drifting through the chromosphere of a cooling, dying white sun. There, in the shadow cast by the world's pulsing core, we sailed from the Eye into elsewhere. Blackness enveloped us. The ocular showed not the black of the deep void, but the black of colorless, starless nothing. When I reached beyond the hull, I sensed only empty endlessness. It was a sensation I'd not felt anywhere else in the galaxy. Even deep space thrummed with the half-alive residue of starbirth and the quiet thoughts of distant mortals. This was the antithesis of life, of matter, of anything at all. We sailed outside reality and unreality alike. The engines flared hot, propelling us through absolute blackness. We felt becalmed, going nowhere at all. The amnesis assured us the Talok was sailing ahead, and with our senses shrouded and our instruments mute, it was her word against the evidence of our eyes. The bridge crew were unsettled, with tempers flaring and blood being shed between mutants and humans over insignificant disagreements. And these creatures were used to living in a nightmare where demons might prey upon them without warning. But the Old One's broken Webway was too much for their senses to easily endure. The absolute nothingness of this section was sensory deprivation on a shipwide scale. When I slept, I did not dream of wolves. I dreamt of nothing at all, waking after a couple of hours each time, no more rested than I had been before.
"Was it like this the last time you sailed through?" asked Telemachon.
His handsome face mask, repaired by my armament priests, shone polished silver in the pale light of the command deck. He had a habit of resting his gauntleted hands on the pommels of the two swords sheathed at his hips. These he wore slung low, almost like a vain human gunslinger, a posturing fact that surprised none of us. I kept staring out at the infinite blackness.
"Exactly the same. This is the only stretch of the Webway I have ever seen that is truly wholly empty." "What's in the others?"
"Death,
Nefertari answered for me, from where she stood by my throne.
Things that broke free from other realms and realities. Things even the Neverborn fear.
Telemachon, who stood casually on the dais's stairs, kept his gaze on the oculus. His voice was contemplative. I've never seen the Radiant Worlds. Are the stories true?
There are many stories, said Nefertari. The truth depends on which tales you listen to.
How foolish of me to expect a straight answer on this ship. Nefertari's reply was a soft laugh. Telemachon's hunger for her was still a palpable thing, an aura that invisibly stained the air around him. He was imagining the salty richness of her blood on his tongue, and the thought made him shiver. Eldar blood does not taste of salt, I said to him. He growled behind the face mask, though the gentility of his voice made it sound closer to a murderous purr.
I don't like you reading my thoughts, he told me.
What a shame. I'm sure you'll get used to it. Nefertari, who was much less impressed than us by the endless black on display, smiled at our petty bickering.
I'm going to duel Agrivian,
she announced as she left the dais. Telemachon watched her leave, and in turn Gaia watched Telemachon.
I want her,
came the swordsman's wish, as clear as if he'd spoken it aloud. He did not send the words to me, but his murderous desire was fierce enough that I couldn't help but sense his thoughts. Gaia heard them as well. My wolf's growl was a truer, lower snarl than that which had left the swordsman's throat. Telemachon turned his helm to face the demon, staring at her with silver-featured serenity.
Silence, dog. No one asked your opinion.
One of the bridge crew, a bestial mutant from Sortiarius's clan herds, approached me with the requisite three bows. The slave's head was a thing of elongated, equine goatishness, and not made for careful speech. With his lolling, spotted tongue and the shape of his jaws, he couldn't show his disapproval with any human expression. Instead, he gave a grunting bray and shook saliva from his distended maw.
Lord Kion.
The words left his feral face with a sound somewhere between a goat's bray and an ursine snarl. A stringy stalactite of saliva roped down from his chin, spattering onto the deck. I gestured permission. Speak.
How long in the dark?
His voice was a snarl through crooked, spit-wet teeth. I sat forwards, casting a brief glance over at the platform where the usual gathering of ragged humans, servitors, and beast mutants poured over the scanning consoles. They were watching us both with unusual focus, slipping glances our way. The silent, endless black was unnerving them. I could feel their unease, not quite rich enough to be fear. Trust the amnesis, T'Shak. The creature lowered his horned head in submission. He was clad in piecemeal armor of flak plate over primitive chainmail, a clash of war gear looted from an officer of the Imperial Guard, and tattered iron-era protection for the tribal duels fought by our slave caste in the ship's bowels. The mutant carried no sidearm, as a naval officer would. Instead, a battered las rifle with an aiming spotlight was slung over one shoulder. More than one bridge thrall had felt the crunch of that rifle butt in the face over the decades. T'Shak was an effective enforcer and veteran overseer. The grey fur of his face and clawed hands was frosted with ever more white year after year. He was as worried as the others, but showed no sign of his fears. Bestial eyes glared at the rest of the crew with the same animal challenge as ever. My reliable overseer.
Trust in the Queen of Ghosts. A true truth.
The Queen of Ghosts. The beast mutant herds had the most entertaining beliefs. Their kind was barred from setting foot in the core, and to them, the Anamnesis was the goddess of the ship, always to be obeyed and appeased through worship.
When they fought in the pits, they would sacrifice the hearts of their enemies to her. On nights given over to their tribal rituals, they sometimes sacrificed their young. Trust her, I repeated.
Trust, yes, but...
Gaia growled at his defiance. Tajak bared his teeth right back at her. Cease that, both of you. Tajak bowed the traditional three times and turned away. Several of the other crew still cast their furtive glances towards us. I cleared my throat to catch the mutant's attention. Why do I sense this unease in your thoughts, old one? Tajak hesitated, flinching as if struck.
I do not know, Lord Kion.
Come here. He walked back to me, iron-shod hooves clanking on the deck.
Your wish, Lord Kion.
Look at me, Tajak. More heads were beginning to turn towards us now, some sibilant hunger spicing their thoughts. Curious, curious. Few slaves ever made direct eye contact with either Ashokai or myself, and Tajak was no different, despite his rank above the others. The mutant lifted his monstrous head, cautiously regarding me with bulbous black eyes, one of which was hidden beneath the plastic lens of a targeting monocle. His bladed horns of dirty ivory gave him enough height to stand as tall as me, had I been out of my throne. There. The source of his recent unrest. A wispy whiteness just beginning in the black orb of his right eye. A cataract forming. Your vision is fading with age, Tajak, is it not? He bared his tombstone teeth in an instinctive growl, not at me but at the rest of the command deck. An unsubtle tide of mocking viciousness drifted from the nearest mutants. Several of them showed their teeth in amused snarls of their own. Attend to your duties, I sent into the mind of every living being on the bridge. The psychic compulsion overloaded the limited minds of several servitors, who either stood slackly by their consoles or slouched and groaned wordlessly in their duty cradles, in need of a tech adept's ministrations. There would soon be another lecture from Ashokai about my careless use of power. Tajak turned back to me, his thoughts flickering with images of bleeding fur and knives in the dark. I had shamed him with my words, giving voice to his weakness before many of the very creatures he would fight in the clan warrior pits. Given the numbers of his kindred who had endured their overseer's beatings over the years, many would now strike back in the aftermath of this public shaming. He snapped his bestial jaws in defiance, careful not to spit his anger towards me. Sortiarius bred loyal, cunning slaves. I ordered him to his knees. Backwards jointed legs made the task a trial, and his old bones didn't help. This close to him, it was much easier to see the hundreds of scars crisscrossing his fur in lines where the hair grew back a lighter shade. Wounds on forearms, biceps, chest, throat, face, hands. All on the front. Tajak always faced his enemies. That was a crude courage that Lahore would admire, I was sure. Sealing and salving wounds is no effort at all. You merely encourage the flesh to perform its natural function. Scabs form, scars heal, closed, and so on. But to reverse time's erosion of flesh and blood and bone, that takes more skill in the art than many will ever master. Imperial rejuvenate treatments mix chemical lore and surgical expertise, but still do not reach the art's heights. They only emulate its lesser effects. Physicians and hematores will engineer simple genetic deception through cloned flesh, synthesized blood, or extracting the subject's own blood and altering its nature through techniques of replenishment and enrichment. The warp alone allows the remaking of flesh itself. But you must trust it once you breathe it into the bloodstream. Its mutagenic touch is not always as kind as one hopes. As I've said before, in the Great Eye, we all wear our sins on our skin. My gloved fingertips brushed to Jacques' forehead. I had no need to touch him, but the slave caste requires certain theatrics. And, as with any display of authority, the trick lies in making power seem effortless to those who serve. Rise, I said a moment later, withdrawing my touch. Rise and return to your duties. He opened his bulbous eyes, both black, both clean, clear, black. One goatish ear twitched. He brayed beneath his rancid breath, just like the beast that made up much of his genetic core.
Ungrateful, Lord Kion.
I know. Go. He was far too useful to lose in a simple fight among his tribe. His kindred backed away from his approach or hunched over their consoles, threatened by his sudden vigor and the aura of my favor. Even his fur was darker, the frosting of white darkened back to gray. One of the taller, stronger males risked a barking bray at Tejac's return and was rewarded with a rifle butt to the cheek. He lowered his horns in submission and took his bloody face back to his duties, a challenge that would wait for another night. Awaken the Vox Link to the Tertiary Crew District.
Awakening,
said the anamnesis over the bridge-wide speakers. At the sound of her voice, several of the beast mutants ritually touched talismans of bone or dried skin on the cords around their furred throats.
Failing, she said. Failing. Failing. Failed.
No reply from Falcus and his brethren. But of course. I leaned back in the throne of red iron and sculpted bone, watching the oculus reveal the endless offering of nothingness. At my feet, Gaia snarled softly, her white eyes watching as I stroked the unpowered blade of my force axe. What are you thinking, Gaia?
No Neverborn has ever returned unscathed from the Radiant Worlds.
Her words made me smile. We will sail past them, you have my word. Her pearly gaze drifted from the axe to the cobalt armor I wore.
Your soul fire burns brighter, Master. I see the axe melting in your fists, and your armor charred black.
I ran my gloved thumb along Sayern's edge, soothed by the smooth scraping sound. At the time, I believed her words were nothing more than the inhuman vicissitudes of how she perceived the world around her, unable to see mundane detail, forever staring at creation with a demon's twisted senses, seeing significance in all things, deserving or otherwise. She was still looking at me.
Your soul fire will soon burn bright enough to make the Neverborn kneel.
You sound like Tokugra. My wolf snapped her jaws at my teasing mockery.
Laugh all you wish, Master. But I see you in scorched armor kneeling before another.
I'm done with kneeling, I said the words aloud, feeling them slip from my lips and regretting the lapse as bestial heads turned to me from across the deck. The Emperor is dead, and my father is damned. I will never kneel again. So defiant, so certain, so ignorant. The pride of those who have nothing worth fighting for. When we emerged from the nothingness of the Avernus breach, we sailed straight into a sky full of fire. One moment there was stillness and empty darkness. The next we were gliding through ice space as the void burned with golden light. Brightness scored itself across my retinas in a blur of pain. Mutants and humans alike recoiled from the sudden acidic light. We'd plunged back out of the webway into a region of the eyes scorched by the Emperor's Astronomican.
Close the oculus!
Ashokai called down from his observation platform. The layered armor plating spiraled closed over the viewscreen before any of the crew could obey.
Oculus sealed,
said the Amanesis across the bridge vox. We had several seconds of respite before the ship lurched beneath us, brutally enough to hurl half of the Strategium's crew to the deck. Lahore crashed down the central dais's stairs, smashing into a pack of helpless servitors and breaking the gods alone knew how many of the slaves' bones. Telemachon had drawn both blades, keeping his balance only by plunging them into the floor to grip and keep steady.
"The fire tight,"
Ashokai pulsed to me as he picked himself up off the deck.
"Collision," crackled the anamnesis in a spurt of corrupt vox. "Hull temperature increasing."
"Shields," I sent to her, to everyone on the command deck. "Shields!"
"Void shields somnolent. Hull temperature increasing."
The Talok gave another savage heave, throwing more of us from our feet in a tide of ceramite and flesh against the durasteel deck. Thunder echoed through the ship.
"Collision," the anamnesis said again, still utterly calm. "Hull temperature increasing."
The ship started to roll, sending bodies skidding along the deck as the gravitic stabilizers fought to keep up. The Talok groaned in an unwelcome sing-song of straining metal bones.
"The Astronomicon is tearing us apart."
Ashokai's sending was as desperate as I'd ever heard him. "It cannot be. We are past the fire tide." I reached outside the ship, casting my senses far and wide. It hurt, for pushing my mind into the psychic fire was no different from plunging your hand into boiling water. Past the shrieking song of the eternal choir ringing within my skull was a feral consciousness, vast and inhuman, drowning in madness and pain and panic. It clung to the Talok, holding on to us as it dissolved in the Emperor's light. Torment projected in a stream from my mind, drowning in liquid agony. The light, the fire, the burning, the fire, the light, blind, the burning. The ship gave another heave, sending yet more crew to the deck. Alarms howled across the bridge as hololithic damage reports streamed across my retinal display. It wasn't just hull strain now. Whole sections of the spinal battlements were being broken away. Whatever was out there, it was breaking the Talok's back. "Something has us in its grip," I sent to the amnesis. "Kill it!" That's when the thing roared. If its grip had shaken the ship, its roar sent violent shudders coursing through every iota of the Talok's bones, bursting the crew's eardrums across the lower decks where the creature's cry echoed loudest. A more familiar tremor buried itself in the shaking as the anamnesis fired the broadsides on both sides of the hull. Entire weapon decks spat their anger into the golden void. Fresh pain flavored the creature's silent screams, and its draconic roar rang out again, loud enough to shatter several console monitors.
"Hull temperature increasing,"
the amnesis said with infuriating calm. "Kill it, Itzara!"
"Second cannonade already priming. Firing now."
The oculus resolved into an image of burning, dissolving flesh, wrapping the battlements in a living shroud. Pinkish skin melting in golden fire, millions of holes opening like pits of stretching sludge as the bright fire ate it alive. Even through the shaking of the ship coming apart, I was getting a better sense of the creature. Something vast, some demon dragon or void serpent, latched onto the hull in feral madness, clinging and crushing us as it died in the Astronomican's light. Doubtless it had been fleeing for the webway, hitting the Talok just as we emerged back into I-space. In its death panic, it gripped us as its salvation. I reached for its mind once more.
"The light! The fire! The light!"
And I pushed at its consciousness, shattering through its whirling thoughts to its broken brain. The Astronomican's light, harmless to human flesh and cold iron, was incinerating the Neverborn. It was almost too easy to...
"The light! The pain! The fire!"
break its dying mind apart. No different from putting down a wounded animal. No one could have conquered the thing if it was unwounded, but savaged by the Talok's guns and melting in psychic fire, I held its mind in my hands, and even as it was almost dying, I crushed.
It burst across the Talok's shattered battlements, blasting the ship with hissing gobbets of viscera, which still dissolved in the gold-drenched void. One final shiver rocked the Talok. Then all was still. The sudden silence was almost deafening. Slowly, the ship righted itself. The crew regained their feet in the aftermath. It took several seconds for the omnipresent thrum of the engines to filter back into my senses. Telemachon alone hadn't lost his balance. He made no effort to help me rise. Instead, he sheathed his swords, turning his serene gaze on the oculus. Outside, in the gold-misted void, all seemed calm. We had emerged in the radiant worlds, past the firetide where the Astronomican burned strongest and brightest. I breathed easier in the stillness. Gaia walked back to my side. She had been safely hidden in the shadows during the collisions.
"Master," she said.
"My wolf." "Amnesis, damage report."
"Extensive," the anamnesis replied at once. "Processing."
Automated ink styluses on several consoles began to scratch out the specifics of the Talok's injuries on reams of dirty parchment. The machine spirit's mind at work. Lahore, who was overseeing several slaves at the Auspex console, began to study the printed lore. I had no doubt there was a faster, updated stream of information playing across his eye lenses at the same time, but he was a man who craved simplicity. Men, women, and mutants shuffled back to their posts. Telemachon was looking past me over my shoulder.
"Kion," he said gently, gesturing with a gauntleted hand. "Is that one of yours?"
I turned to where he pointed. There, sat in placid splendor on my throne, was the ghost of a murdered god. The god's face was covered by a mask of shining gold, its features wrenched into a rictus of crying torment. The expression, eyes open, mouth wide, even the parted teeth showing in detailed gold, was a man's death scream immortalized in holy metal. Bladed sun rays flared from the edges of the metal face, forming a crest of golden knives. The rest of his manifestation existed in contrast to the dark ostentation of his sacred helm. He was thin, cadaverously so, and wearing a plain toga of imperial white. His skin didn't commit to paleness or duskiness. It seemed a caramel blend of both, perhaps born from genetics, perhaps stained by the light of a natural sun. I'd seen carvings of him on cave walls, scrawled by primitive men and women awaiting the coming of the Emperor. The master of mankind, in his skeletal ritual form as the sun god, the solar priest.
"Men of flesh and blood and bone, sailing where fire and madness meet."
When he spoke, condescension laced the words, burning beneath the gentility. Yet for all its strength, it was a hesitant voice. Here was a creature unaccustomed to speech, confused by its nuances. The spirit regarded us, and its gaze fell last of all upon me.
"A stain lies upon your soul, a blight that feigns life as a wolf."
"She is a wolf," I replied, "and she is no blight."
"I will remove its touch if you desire."
Gaia bared her black teeth at the spindly revenant and snapped her jaws once.
"Ghost, touch me and die."
The thing spoke again in its unpleasantly inhuman tones.
"A parasite clad in the flesh of the beast, circling at the shadows of your soul. Blight. Taint. Sacrilege."
Gaia threw back her head and howled, issuing a challenge between the two spirits. I ran my fingers through her dark fur.
"Stay back from it."
"Yes, master."
"And you, spirit, will not touch my wolf." The wraithly priest extended bone-thin fingers, gesturing to the others gathering around my throne.
So be it. Why are you here, men of flesh and blood and bone?
Because we choose to be, I replied. Behind us, Tejac was one of several mutants snarling and braying at the enthroned figure. A pack of them were crying out in pain as they took up defensive positions. Whatever this thing was, its presence was hurting them. Hold your fire, I sent to them, honestly unsure if they would obey.
Name yourself, said Telemachon.
He hadn't drawn his swords as he faced the thing on my throne. The question made it hesitate once more. It seemed to struggle with everything we asked, as though we spoke an unfamiliar tongue.
I am what remains of the Song of Salvation.
The spirit was breathing, which was a rare and false gesture of life among incarnated creatures. Within each inhalation, I heard the roar of faraway fire. Every exhalation resonated with the muted sounds of distant screams.
Get off our ship, Lahore said. Whatever you are.
His heavy bolter was back in his arming chamber, but he had his axe ready in his hands. The Solar Priest linked his thin fingers in his lap.
Once you were his will, rendered in iron and flesh, sent forth to bring the galaxy to heal. I am his will, rendered in silent light, sent forth to guide a billion vessels home. I am what remains of the Emperor, now that his body is dead and his mind is dying. It is a death that may take an eternity, but it will come. And then I will fall silent with his final thought.
I could feel the ache suffered by the mutants and human crew now. The Solar Priest's nearness made my sinuses throb. I could feel my nose beginning to bleed. You are the Astronomicon, I said. The golden mask tilted in a nod.
I stare into eternity and witness the dance of demons. I sing forever into the endless night, adding my melody to the great game. I am Imperius, the avatar of the Astronomicon. I have come to ask you to turn back.